Studio 360.
I was back on the show, and there were things I was supposed to do. Let's see, I walked by the National Theater. I stole a truck somehow. There was a truck parked. There were keys there. I drove around. Fortunately, I was aware enough not to hurt anybody or myself at the time. I walked across the street with my eyes closed to confirm to myself that the show was really happening, because if it weren't happening, I would just get run over and my pain could end.
In the movie The Truman Show, Jim Carrey's character, Truman, thinks he's living this delightfully normal life in a perfectly prosperous little town.
Good morning!
Morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
What the character in the movie does not realize is that it's not normal or real. It's all staged. He is the star of a huge hit reality TV show, and this was 1998, before reality shows were really a thing. Every encounter Jim Carrey's character has is scripted, sometimes to serve advertisers.
Why don't you let me fix you some of this new Mo cocoa drink? All natural cocoa beans from the upper slopes of Mount Nicaragua, no artificial sweeteners.
What the hell are you talking about? Who are you talking to?
But for Kevin Hall, life is just the opposite of that movie. Kevin is a real person. He's got a mental disorder known as the Truman Show delusion. Kevin's a world-class sailor, been on multiple America's Cups teams and on the 2004 U.S. Olympic team. But he regularly believes that his life is being filmed for a non-existent TV show, of which he's the star.
I'm compelled, in my instance, to do something or go somewhere or say something or listen into a conversation that makes other people uncomfortable. In my mind, in my delusional state, I think I'm supposed to do that, and they don't know that, so it makes them very uncomfortable.
Listening, overhearing somebody in life?
And thinking it's about me. It's for me. It's to help me know what to do next. And then at times, it's actually a voice. Go get on the bus.
That voice is what Kevin calls the director. In his delusions, he receives messages from the director about how he's supposed to behave or communicate, all for the benefit of the show. Mary Pilon learned about Kevin's story when she was a sports reporter for the New York Times.
So I reached out and said, hey, I'm trying to find Kevin Hall. You know, I just have a few questions. And I started out thinking I was just going to write a Sunday story. I had no idea it was going to be a 300-page book.
Her book about him and his life and his peculiar showbiz psychosis is called The Kevin Show. Mary was drawn to Kevin's story because of his life as a world-class sportsman.
One of the things you see in person and when you spend a lot more time around something like the Olympics is how psychologically taxing this world is and how completely different that lifestyle is. And what is it like to spend so much of your life training for a few seconds that you get a shot at once every 4 years? I mean, in journalism, nobody says every 4 years we're going to line you up and rank you 1, 2, and 3 and the rest of you are going to be forgotten. Maybe shame your families and countries while you're at it. I mean, just the stakes of it when you're there in person.
Totally.
Are so different.
And so, Kevin, you have been sailing all your life. You were a serious sailor and athlete as a kid. When did these episodes start happening to you?
My junior year of college, I had been sailing every day, and I changed my regime a bit to try and be on the Olympic team. And I went from a regular schedule of on the water to not being on the water nearly every day with the team. And I got lost. I was struggling a little bit with my coursework. I was anxious about midterms. I started sort of staying up all night cramming, drinking a lot of extra coffee.
Being a college student.
Being a college student, but I guess my system just over-responded to it. I think a lot of it was just literally around fear of failure, that I had never failed at anything before. In fact, I was a world champion when I was 16, and I wasn't really the kind of person who was good at failing. And I have a big imagination, and so my imagination said, well, we can fix that. Instead of you being a guy at college with a bunch of other smart people who's struggling a little bit, let's just make you the center of the universe.
And very smart people. You were at Brown University, and this is around 1990 or so?
1989, yeah.
So almost a decade before The Truman Show even came out.
Who are you? I am the creator of a television show that gives hope and joy and inspiration to millions.
Then who am I?
You're the star.
Do you remember when you first saw The Truman Show?
Oh, yeah.
was it shot in a theater when it came out?
It was
out?
Not in a theater, which is something I regret a little bit. It was a VCR, and to say I sort of got sucked into the story would just be a ridiculous understatement. I just, all of a sudden, so much of what had happened to me was something that somebody else could depict.
And it came out before reality TV had really exploded.
And the following year, a movie that I can imagine also might have struck you in a special way came out, which was The Matrix. Did you see The Matrix?
Did I see The Matrix? are my kids sick of me making them watch The Matrix with me again?
Yeah.
Yes. What I like about The Matrix is everything, but certainly the ontology not being obvious and things not being...
Meaning the nature of reality. For listeners who aren't familiar with the word ontology.
What is real? How do you define real? If you're talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain.
So part of me can't let go of that. Part of me is so into this, what if nobody really knows what's going on, and what if some of what I believe is actually as right as any other belief system? How do I behave normally when I have these beliefs with nobody to talk to about them?
Mary's book describes several remarkable episodes of your delusion, what you call being on the show, like when you stole the truck in Tokyo as a member of the U.S. Goodwill team in this big sailing competition. So you just suddenly break off from your teammates, convinced you had these certain obligations for the show.
And that's where it's hard for people to imagine that your brain can keep confirming something that's clearly not true.
Right.
Once you're all in, you're all in. And you need something from the outside to tell you that it's not true. And I was able to wander back and find the team at the hotel just before they were getting on the bus to go back to the airport. Things were looking really good, and then something just snapped, and I got really agitated, and I ran out the baggage carousel and onto the tarmac and under the first plane I found. So I was under a 747, and that's where I got arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunately, before 9/11.
Yeah, or I could easily have been shot.
As this is happening, are you under the impression that other people, strangers on the street, are also in on the show?
Yes, everybody's in on it. And everything I'm doing is because I'm supposed to do it, and I'm supposed to do it to make a good scene for the show, and I'm making a good scene for the show so that people become more aware of how fine the line is between comfortable and uncomfortable life.
Right.
A lot of these episodes in the book, it would have been impossible to corroborate every single thing, because in some cases he was the only one in the moment, but we pulled medical records. I interviewed other people who had been there. So maybe that was his then girlfriend, now wife, Amanda. Maybe that was his teammates. Memory is very fickle and it's very complicated. And the best of circumstances, and I give Kevin a lot of credit because he would say sometimes, like, I know this sounds crazy, but I think I saw the color pink. Or like, I know that the sign probably didn't actually say this, but this is what I saw. So the end notes for this book are quite lengthy because I felt like readers should know where things came from. But that the nature of truth is that it's you're choosing a truth in some ways. And so all of this was going on. I have to say, as a reporting endeavor, it was by far the most existential thing I'd ever done. And then the election happened halfway through or a little later than that. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've just been thinking about reality TV and alternate realities and technology.
And lies and delusion.
for a long time. And also, you know, when you walk around, you see people with their smartphones. And
yeah.
Obsessed with Instagrams.
And talking to no one, apparently.
Right, and I just had so many moments where I thought, well, do we all have Truman Show disorder? Like, do we all have this? How crazy is Kevin? I mean, what is Instagram if not you creating your own PR
show.
Firm, right?
Yes,
you know, Dr. Joel Gold and his brother Ian Gold wrote this fabulous book called Suspicious Minds. Who coined this term. And then one of the things I think is so fascinating about their work is really broadly, they're looking at how is culture shaping the narrative spine of these delusions that not just someone like Kevin has, but all of us have to some degree. And how is that formulated? And how is the stuff that we're ingesting staying in there and coming out in different ways?
This is your parental hub. I'm just pairing it with Sarah's implant. Now tap this icon here to relay her optic feed.
This is what she's seeing now?
That's right.
Whoa.
Do either of you watch Black Mirror?
Yes. Love it.
And it seems to relate to our conversation. The fungibility of reality in a digital world, which sets up all kinds of other issues that we just haven't faced in the past.
Absolutely. And, you know, Kevin repeatedly would joke with me about kind of calling himself the village idiot. And when I left this reporting process, and I would argue it's still going on, I left with more questions about the village than the idiot, actually. I felt like for the last few years, I've just walked around and thought, we all have this. We all are in some version of the show. Technology is impacting us in different ways. And that our brains are these really complicated things that we should fully explore.
Kevin, you love these pop cultural depictions that jibe with your relationship to reality. You're also a big fan of James Joyce's novel Ulysses.
Stephen jerked his thumb towards the window, saying, "That is God." "Hooray! Aye! Whee!" "What?" Mr. Deasy asked. "A shout in the street," Stephen answered, shrugging his shoulders.
For me, Ulysses was a lot of things. One was just the freewheeling language and just feeling like I was in his head with him. And wow, it sounds pretentious to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. That's how my mind works a lot of the time. And there's a comfort there. And just a way of kind of looking at the world, you know, that God can be as simple as a shout or a bark or a soccer kick in the street. Like, sometimes that's how it feels to me. Like, just that clap happened right then, and wow. And I get that from Joyce's writing, and it's comforting.
David Foster Wallace, also in the Kevin Hall pantheon of important storytellers. Same-ish reasons?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
His writing and his courage to keep facing what was clearly a big challenge for him, having a brain that was three planets big, not just one. Like, he kept facing that, and that's hard.
Mary, when he started talking about James Joyce and David Foster Wallace, too, what did you make of that? Did that just make it, this guy is really interesting?
You know, I'm a big, obviously, reader, and I'm a big fan of fiction and storytelling. And I think that this, you always hear these kind of platitudes about how it connects us and it creates empathy. And this project and working on this really connected those dots for me a lot more closely, that like a hand from the past could reach out from pages and grab you. And Kevin wasn't the only person who said, "I read Wallace and Joyce like it's a secret language." And for me, when I read either of them, I mean, I enjoy it, but I have to work at it. You know, I have to be really focused. I often will do it with a pen in hand and looking up stuff. When Kevin and other folks I've talked to talk about reading it, it's like they're just tearing through it and they're ingesting it in a way that is really powerful.
Kevin, millions of people, especially in America, act on directions that they think they're hearing, but they call the director God. Do you think about that kind of religious belief in terms of your illness?
I think not having a connection to some mystery and not wondering if there's something is a bummer.
Couldn't agree with you more. So, that just doesn't necessarily mean that I will then speak in tongues.
Right. So where is that beautiful gray area where your belief is and your make-believe are something that empower you and ennoble you and help you want to give back? And where is that? And I connected with wanting to help a lot. I just didn't do it in a super healthy way at the beginning. And I'd like to have a do-over on that because I would like to help a lot. And I'm getting tools and skills and awareness and religious and spiritual thinking that helps me do that.
Right.
But that's new for me.
That was Kevin Hall with Mary Pilon, who wrote a book about him called The Kevin Show. It is out right now.